You are all in a class that you study disasters in this particular class, and now we're in the middle of a global disaster. What's that been like?
Surreal. This is Emily. But yes, it felt surreal.
Why so?
The approach with the academic expectations of you in your school book and with your text and the things that you're supposed to kind of be reading up on. But then when it happens and it's happening around you and you're an active participant in it, it feels like almost otherworldly, especially because things changed so fast. So it's like, brace yourself. What's going on?
And this is Christina, and it was interesting reading the text about it, being aware of the worldly catastrophes, and then watching it happen in the other countries. I found myself starting to prepare earlier for it. It's like, okay, this is more than likely coming. So it was quite interesting putting the two together and watching it take place.
Yes, and this is Nikki, and I was also preparing a little bit earlier too, and a lot of my friends and family scoffed at me for doing so, but now 3 weeks in, they're all like, oh, you are really prepared.
Now, Emily mentioned that things changed fast or have been changing fast with this pandemic. Is that something you've seen with past disasters, too? Do things change quickly?
This is Emily. Yes. As far as the textbooks that Earl and the things that Dr. Heather has been having us look at for the course material, things happen. And they also happen in multi-tiered things, multi-tiered events, and on different levels. So it's simultaneously and quickly progressing in both the things that we've been learning about and then seeing that kind of unfold.
This is Nikki. This disaster was a little interesting, too, in that the United States almost had more time to respond, and our government really didn't. And I don't know if they were thinking it's because, you know, we've seen these types of viruses before, such as like SARS and MERS. I think it was in 2003 and then in 2007, maybe. And those didn't really, you know, travel the globe at a grand level. I mean, they did go out and about, but I think in the United States we had few cases. And then here it just seemed like as soon as our first case got into Seattle, and then, you know, a couple more in Chicago, it just kind of went really fast. Like it just started spreading. And now we are the country with the top cases. So it just seems like it has just been widespread.
The class started the semester examining past disasters. Do you see any similarities between what's happening now and a particular disaster from the past?
This is Nikki. I think that the disasters that we've studied all show, along with this one that's happening now, all show a vulnerability for our most vulnerable communities, such as, I would say lower economic status and our minority communities. It seems like, you know, a lot of these disasters really hit those communities very hard. And I think, you know, to an extent, everybody has been affected by this.
Yeah, this is Emily. I agree with Nikki. Also, in general, just the lack of funding and the lack of resources that are available, and then how that's delegated to different groups, because there seems to be a demand for supplies like face masks and hand sanitizer and that sort of thing. And there's not really enough resources for people to get and have access to when they need them.
This is Christina. I agree with my classmates that it does show weaknesses in, say, the government policies and stuff. And, of course, it affects the most vulnerable of society. But it does bring to the forefront where we are lacking in preparedness. Each disaster is different and unique, but, you know, we are definitely lacking in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Okay. So I just want to jump in here as well. I think one of the things that's most interesting for me as a teacher and as a researcher is exactly what these three were just talking about, is how disaster events, regardless of what kind they are, really do illuminate the inequalities in a culture and a society. They shine light on things that during normal or good times are really easy to kind of shove under the rug, right? So things like access to high quality healthcare and to food and, you know, to basic what I consider to be human rights, like running water and electricity. And, you know, we're having conversations here in Illinois about whether townships are allowed to turn water off because people are not able to pay for them because they're unemployed, right? And that just flies in the face of science to me, because we know that this pandemic is something that can be prevented by something as simple and as complicated as soap and water and washing your hands. And when we have these kinds of conversations about, well, you know, let's go ahead and turn the power off and turn the water off, that really shines the light on how complicated and how messy our society is. And it allows us opportunities to talk about really hard things about our country that we may not want to really talk about, but it really kind of breaks everything open.
Right. This is Nikki. And it's not just one disaster, right? It's multiple disasters. It's access to food and, you know, education even. I mean, if an internet, because now that our students are home and they're not able to attend school, we have to realize that some families and some households do not have access to internet. And so how do these students, you know, get their food from breakfast and lunch that they had at school, and then also, you know, the learning that they need to be educated.
This is Emily, and one thing that I've noticed with this pandemic, and also in comparison to the other ones that we've been studying in the class, is that you see, I mean, even though all of these cases are different, there seems to be, there's definitely a spectrum of what happens for economic recovery and how that, just how the community in each of the places, like, for example, we were studying the Exxon Valdez and just how that community ended up being pretty much devastated because of what had happened with their economy. And so one thing that I heard not too long ago was that our president was going to continue to demand that people receiving EBT benefits were still expected to work 20 hours a week in order to get their benefits. And I don't know if that's changed or not, or if that was kind of like shut down in, you know, the government in policy or not, but it's something like that doesn't make sense because our entire economy right now is teetering, and there's businesses that are closing. And so how can people go to work if the businesses aren't letting people do their job? So, yeah, it's a very, very sensitive balance, and our economy is very fragile.
This is Christina. This disaster catastrophe is unique as well. As Nikki brought up Emily brought up, with the other catastrophes, the communities have been able to pull together and to help each other. And with us, with stay-at-home orders and trying to stay inside, it is hard to know who our friends are, who our neighbors are that's out there that needs assistance to be able to get them through, and then how to help them when we're all supposed to stay apart and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say the situation and the response to this pandemic compares to the global flu pandemic of about 100 years ago?
This is Emily, and I think one thing that's different since 1918 is that we have different medical advancements. So I guess naturally you would think that with those kinds of advancements made, that we would be able to find a cure for this quicker, but also with there being so much kind of experimentation on trying to find out, you know, what that cure is, you get a lot of what appears to me to be like kind of false positives as well. You don't really know the entire story, you don't know the entire answer of where this came from, what it was caused by. How exactly does it spread? Are there certain people that are immune? I just think that kind of technological advancement is a big change for sure.
And hi, this is Nikki, and I do agree that we have very much advanced in science since 1918. And just for the fact that we do have the internet and we can share data, and I do think that data is going to be one of the most important things to get over this, along with a vaccine and immunity testing. So we are all connected.
Mm-hmm. This is Emily, and I'd like to add to the population since 1918 is different, and our city centers, how many people are in a city, what we have as far as where our major pockets of population are compared to what is rural. You know, you have a very crowded city and you've got more people that are exchanging their germs or whatever they're passing on. Our lifestyle is entirely different than 100 years ago too. And those ways can kind of be contributing factors as to how a viral or bacterial disease spreads.
Can you point to any particular lesson learned so far from this disaster? Or do you feel we need to get past the disaster before you can start to look at the lessons learned?
This is Nikki, and I think the best time to learn is during. I think we will learn. We can learn a lot now, and we will learn a lot after. And I just hope, again, I'm a data person, so I always hope that we have a lot of data to look at and to search through. And also, not only data, but then one of the pillars of anthropology is ethnography, right? And so we want to talk to people and see how they're doing and what they're going through and even afterwards. What is society going to look like after this?
And this is Christina, and I agree. We need to be paying attention to the people and listening to what's going on and learning now with all the social inequalities that are existing and see where the weaknesses are and try to, you know, prevent them and take action now. We'll continue to learn as it you know, passes, but take advantage of now.
Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, so I think, this class, the way I've taught it in the past has been one where we've been removed from the field work, right? And now we are in the field. I mean, we are experiencing this, and that's why, you know, as soon as the pandemic hit, I decided, well, this is, you know, a great learning opportunity for us all. But it's also, you know, the students now are doing weekly diaries that are based on, you know, their field journals, right? And these three in particular, along with this, you know, the rest of the students, are really, I feel really honored to be able to read what they're writing about, because they're really doing such hard work. I mean, we're talking about unemployment, we're talking about mental health issues, we're talking about worrying for other people. And this is the learning that we all have to do. And so, you know, it's a fantastic, I mean, I sound like a total geek, right? Which I am, but it's an amazing opportunity. in a really important historical time period, right? To have these students who are learning about this actually be generating the data that people will look back on in 100 years and be like, wow, you know, that's really fascinating. And it's firsthand accounts, and this is where, you know, the world that you live in, you can start to pick out those variables, right? Because we all experience it differently based on our ethnicity, based on our gender, based on our socioeconomic status. You know, I'm pretty much an introvert, and so being in my house with my family is not a big stress for me, right? Because I would rather just like watch people than have to interact with them all the time, right? But I also have a fairly large house, and I have the ability to make my mortgage payments at this point in time. And if, you know, things were like they were for me 20 years ago, it would be a completely different experience. And so I think that's what's, you know, that's really one of the very, very interesting things from an academic perspective is that you guys are generating the data and you're living it, and it's fascinating. Kudos to you all. You get A's in the class.
Thank you.
When did the class start looking at the coronavirus crisis, and what happened that made you decide this was something you wanted to start looking at during the course of the semester?
So when the university decided...
Procrastinator, right?
Yeah, I am a procrastinator. This is true. And I only had the course built through the first... through the first 8 weeks of the semester, and then I was going to load the rest of the material after spring break. And coincidentally, look what happened, right? And so I thought, well, this is really, you know, this is a great opportunity real time to be looking at things. You know, we had done a segment on how the media perception of things, the stories that the media play, and I think it was in relation to what Greg Button had talked about with the Exxon Valdez. And so I started pulling articles from all over the world, right, and looking at those kinds of things. And so, yes, my procrastination once again paid off.
This is Emily, and I honestly, I was secretly crossing my fingers and hoping that she would adjust the coursework to include what was going on. So,
and this is Nikki, and we were originally going to have a group project, and I know that we had to submit three ideas for a group project. And one of my top ones was the pandemic, because I was always, you know, already watching it very. Closely.
Is this even before it came to the U.S. you were starting to watch it?
Yeah, I actually have a friend in China. And so as soon as this started happening, I can look back at my text messages and I was like, how are you doing? How's your family? You know, and so it takes her a while to respond. I had kind of told Dr. Heather about this because, you know, in China, they don't really have access to social media and the internet at all times. So it takes a little bit for her to respond, but she has been writing me back and she's sending me pictures and, you know, just letting me know how her and her family are doing. And thankfully they have not been sick. They have had their health through this entire thing. So that is a blessing.
This is Emily. I work at a music store out here in Virginia, and one of the saxophone teachers has a student that also goes to UVA here, and he went home to visit his family in China and had been stuck there for the last, like, 2 months. So when I heard that, I was like, okay, this is kind of something to watch and see where this is going to go, because this is, you know, if they're locking people down for flights that they've had planned for a long time, something serious is going on.
Is there anything any of you would like to add?
This is Emily, and I personally don't think you need to be an anthropology student to pay attention to the world that's going on around you. It's sort of what I feel like is, as an individual, everybody's responsibility to stay educated and stay informed and to ask questions relating to some bigger picture issues.
And this is Nikki, and I think, you know, this is a good time to continue practicing our solidarity among each other, and just show a lot of compassion.
And this is Christina, and I agree with my classmates that we just need to be aware and paying attention to those around us, and just be involved with each other.
Thanks again for doing this, everyone.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
We'll see you online.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.